Dr. Robert Sauer, First Vice President of the Missouri Synod, and I'm here to welcome our leaders and our guests. Before we say that exactly, it's become rather common in our church body for congregations to interview pastors before they call them. It's been quite a switch over the years. And in one particular instance reported, a pastor was given the opportunity to ask questions of the search committee. And he began by saying, "What do you do for the poor?" And there was silence until finally, after a minute of embarrassment, the chairman of the committee blurted out, "We don't have that problem here at St. Suburbia." The solving of a problem has to begin with awareness. We are aware, all of us, that most Americans are overweight. We are reminded about it every day on television and in the supermarket and by joggers and diets. And so today we want to become more aware of the other end of it. We're going to speak of poverty and hunger, and they're not the same thing, though they're related. You know, the Lord Jesus said something about poverty that was rather soft. "The poor you always have with you, but when it came to hunger, he was sharper and stronger. You did it not to me," when he talks about feeding the hungry. Now, always there is the danger, of course, that in trying to meet this enormous human need, the gospel will be overshadowed, perhaps swept aside. Always that danger, and of course the answer to that is a conscious commitment to the ministry of word and sacrament. So, with these and many other thoughts in our minds and hearts today, I am pleased to welcome our guests, Dr. Marshall, former president of the Lutheran Church in America, who will be taking over as soon as I leave the podium, and especially those who have come to learn about the needs of the world. Dr. Marshall?
Thank you, Dr. Sauer. It's good to be on the campus of Concordia Seminary, a place that I have frequented on occasion in the past. And as I start today, I am aware of the debt that Lutheran World Relief owes to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. As many of you would know, Lutheran World Relief is not a fundraising organization. We depend for our support on the church bodies who are represented on our board of directors. And I think it would be good just to acknowledge the leadership of the Board of Social Ministry, which is the agency in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod that has responsibility for relating to Lutheran World Relief. And from the staff of that board today, we have the Reverend Dr. Melvin Witt, whom I would like to ask to be recognized and say a few words if he wishes.
Thank you, Dr. Marshall. Just a word concerning our relationship to Lutheran World Relief. As Dr. Marshall indicated, Lutheran World Relief is the inter-Lutheran Overseas Relief and Development Agency of four participating church bodies. It's not a fundraising organization, but looks to its participating church bodies for its basic financial support, and within the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the World Relief Program serves as the fundraising arm of our church for Lutheran World Relief. A little more than 50% of the total funds which we raise through our World Relief program are channeled through Lutheran World Relief Incorporated. Last year, we received almost $6 million in funding from people throughout the Synod, and we're grateful for the open hearts and readiness of our people to give and support this worthy cause. And so we are indeed grateful to be a member of a participating church body of Lutheran World Relief Incorporated, Dr. Marshall, and we certainly pray God's blessings on this 40th anniversary of Lutheran World Relief and on this symposium today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. As Dr. Witt has suggested, we are here in part because This is the observance of the 40th anniversary of Lutheran World Relief. It was an organization put together in the years immediately following World War II, which were years of facing up to a devastated Europe. Of course, that was the land of many of our forebears. We had a natural attachment to that land and the people there, in spite of the fact that we had recently been enemies at war. And the churches took a lead in healing those wounds and of bringing relief to our brothers and sisters in the churches of Germany at that time. Since that time, this organization that was put together by Lutherans of every brand in the United States has survived and continued to serve human need in many, many places around the world. As the person who chairs the board of Lutheran World Relief, I am particularly appreciative of the representation from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on that board. Your church president, Dr. Ralph Bowman, is a member of the board. The executive secretary of the Board of Social Ministry, Dr. Eugene Lindsay, is a member of that board. And Mrs. Marie Sump, a woman who comes from a farm home in Iowa and makes a very valuable contribution to our board, is also a member. I guess the member who has served longer than anybody else was a parish pastor of the Missouri Synod in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the Reverend Dr. Edwin Nerger, who retired from the board just this past year. For the hours of volunteer concern and work on behalf of Lutheran World Relief by these people from your church body, I want to say a hearty thank you. As we sat down as a board to talk about the observance of the 40th anniversary, which actually occurred last October, we thought, first of all, as organizations are likely to do, and we said, let's have a banquet. And it wasn't but a 30-second period until we thought there was something incongruous about an organization dedicated to feeding the hungry of the world, of showing concern for people suffering from poverty in the world, and having a big banquet. A banquet would have been an occasion when we might have invited the top leadership of the church bodies, some of the leaders in colleague agencies around the world that we had cooperated with, maybe some representatives from USAID, the federal government agency that has provided some funding because they have discovered that church organizations can do some things better than the government can do directly. We might have had all those people together. But we had said, rather than that, we ought to get out among the constituency of our church bodies. And perhaps what we ought to be doing is not looking back upon the past, not back over the 40 years of our history, but we ought to be observing this 40th anniversary in a way that looks to the future. It was that orientation that led us to choose the seminaries, the places where the future leadership of the church is being gathered, where they are thinking through the issues of Christian ministry, that we chose to offer the possibility of a symposium. A part of that conclusion was to say that we ought not all be Americans when we observe this anniversary. There ought to be people who have done the actual work which Lutheran World Relief has supported, who would come to us and share their experiences in a face-to-face encounter. And so we decided to invite somebody from Africa and somebody from Asia and somebody from Latin America to help in this symposium. And I will be introducing those persons to you in a little bit. And we conceived of this program then as one in which people from overseas, leadership in this country, particularly seminary students, could spend a day in thinking together about the issues in the area of work in which Lutheran World Relief has been given responsibility. And that's what we will be about. I've been asked to speak very briefly about the challenge before us. And I've chosen to start by speaking about the challenge before us during these few hours that we are together in a symposium, and what we will be trying to consider, study, discuss together. But I do want to look ever so briefly at the broad prospect of the future and what that means to us as Christians. Was brought home to me when at the board of Lutheran World Relief, we had a speaker. It was back in the late 70s when the attention of the world had been focused upon famine in the Sahel, the area south of the Sahara Desert. This speaker pointed out that we now knew that such famines had occurred at 50-year intervals throughout human history. And the speaker raised a serious question. He said, why is it that if this has been going on for all of these centuries, that we should be overly concerned? That continued to trouble me, because we really didn't answer the question after that speech and the discussion which we had. And I came to a conclusion that there are two basic reasons. One is that in this late 20th century, we know how to do something about that kind of problem, vast as it is. Modern science has befriended humanity in giving us solutions to many problems that could not be dealt with in the past. Some of us have been able to benefit from those discoveries of modern science in the healing of some of the people we love most intimately and dearly. And what I was saying to myself was that the benefits of modern science are not just for me and the people I know and the people whom I can personally love, but the benefits of modern science belong to the whole world of humanity. But that brought me to a second answer. Why did I feel that way? The first answer might be, modern science has taught us we can do something about it. The second answer was, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ has given us the motivation to reach out to others, as Luther put it, to be a servant to our neighbor. Modern science has made neighbors of the people of all the world. Distances in miles are not what they once were. It is Christ that has taught us how to be neighbors in this world village. So having come to that answer, I have had to answer again and again, how do we specifically show this through the kind of work that Lutheran World Relief does? And one of the gratifying experiences in being a part of Lutheran World Relief has been the awareness that no one of us works alone. It's not just the board, it's not just the staff, it's the millions of people in Lutheran churches that are involved. And that becomes apparent when we are confronted with the kind of crisis that was brought to our attention last year, and in fact a few of the later months in 1984, the crisis in Africa, where famine was concentrated in Ethiopia, to be sure, but also famine was being experienced in a multitude of nations in that vast continent. Actually, Lutheran World Relief had known about this crisis a whole year in advance of the public attention that it received in our country. We had issued a special appeal for relief in Africa, and at that time, for some countries in Latin America as well. It took the United States public a whole year to catch up with where we who are working in that field all the time were aware of the great need. And it was not until April of 1985, until the American government was able to get through legislation in its political machinery to make an American government contribution to resolving the problem. But the gratifying part of that whole story was the almost impulsive response of Americans. In an outpouring of generosity, and the contributions from Lutherans in the United States took on such proportions that there was such a stack of mail at the Lutheran Center in New York that volunteers had to be called for. About a dozen people brought in from all kinds of foreign lands like New Jersey into the center of New York to open mail, take out the checks, as people responded in that kind of love and concern, which for the people who were responding to Lutheran World Relief represented an expression of their faith, an outgrowth of their faith, a fruit of their faith, to use Luther's connection between good works and faith. That was all commendable. But as 1985 wore on, the gifts began to diminish. It is true that some of the need diminished also. The number of countries afflicted with famine in Africa decreased in number. In Ethiopia, that had been the center of our concern, there were rains in a few places. As a result of that, the reports that got back to us were exaggerated in terms of the diminishing of the need. When we sent our own people to assess the overall need, we saw that there were still crisis areas. We began to see some articles in newspapers, broadcasts on radio and television, of the need for long-term work, not only to meet the continuing crisis in those remaining places, but also to prepare for a day when crisis would be less prevalent. And then you begin to ask, where does the long-term motivation arise? Impulse is one thing, but long-term motivation is another. We certainly saw that impulse can go astray, good as it is in its origin. You know how musicians got into the act, and God blessed them. That was all to the good. But they sent things to Ethiopia with no delivery system. They created an atrocity that got back to the American public, and some people drew the conclusion that everything was being wasted. It was the people who had been at this work for years and years and had the delivery systems that were able to solve that problem, and had been solving it before some of the other impulse givers even got into the act. Lutheran World Relief had been at work in a section of Ethiopia for so many years that when the American government became interested and said, how do we get into that area behind the conflict lines where guerrilla warfare is going on, they discovered, why, there's an agency that has been getting behind those lines for years. And that was the reason they came through with tens of millions of dollars of supplies and shipping expenses. Money finally to purchase trucks, although that was all too slow in coming. They discovered that a group of Christians had been concerned and had developed the delivery system that could express the church's stewardship when others wanted to get into the act. Long-term commitment, I dare say, will have difficulty, except in those Christian circles where faith is such a constant motivating power in personal lives that Christian love pours out to the poor, to the hungry, the people who cannot create problems in the world the way the more affluent can, the way the more powerful can, but who suffer from the problems of the world more than most. It will take faith and love from Jesus Christ to give us the long-term commitment to service in the dimensions needed. And heaven knows those are needed. We need research about how to create a green revolution in Africa. We will need to cooperate with all kinds of other persons and institutions to put forward that possibility. For the full dimensions of this are not only long term, they are dimensions of depth also. I saw that illustrated in a very personally devastating way when I was visiting a javelina outside a city in Mexico, and there in this dirt floor hut, there was an Indian couple with two children. The older boy had one eye that wouldn't open, and the other eye was all bulging. He was completely blind. These Indians had come down out of the mountains, as they were rarely willing to do, and their purpose was to visit a government hospital that they didn't trust all too much. But they'd heard that there were doctors there who could work miracles, and they hoped for that for their boy. The doctor had to tell them there was nothing he could do. It was too late. This was blindness called by malnutrition. The most he could do was to give them advice that might prevent blindness for their younger child. And so he gave them a menu that indicated the kinds of food that would be necessary to prevent that kind of blindness. And the people went off downhearted. And now here they sat, telling how they had hoped for a cure and there had been none. And as they looked to the future, they could not even contemplate hope there. They had good advice, except for one thing. They had no access to adequate food, let alone the kinds of protein-rich foods and vitamin-rich foods that were needed to prevent blindness. They could only look forward to a second child going blind. And then it was I remembered one hunger fund director calling attention to our Lutheran World Relief Board to something that has become almost a cliche. He said, if you give a person a fish, you will feed him for a day, and he will be hungry again tomorrow. If you teach a person to fish, he can provide for his own hunger needs for the rest of his life. But the cliche leaves one thing out. As this hunger director pointed out, the person you teach to fish must have access to a place to fish. Being a neighbor today looks at the long-range needs of people because we are able to do something about the long-range needs as well as the immediate needs that our impulses of generosity would serve. Dealing with world hunger today looks at the dimensions of the need also in depth to get at the root causes. The challenge before us today is to think through these issues of world hunger and poverty in terms of the long range and the in-depth elements of need. And the challenge before us in all the years that you shall live and minister will be to deal with the needs, the material needs of human life in those full dimensions. To help us in that thinking today, we have three guests who on the program are called Third World Guests, having been with them on the first day at a seminary in the East. I had already heard the protest which maybe has resounded through each of their visits to the several Lutheran seminaries in our land. And that is the challenge, that we have to recognize that the term third world is not adequate to describe the portion of the world from which they come. It would be a little more adequate to say the two-thirds of the world from which they come. And I'm going to ask each of them to stand when I call upon them, come here to the microphone, and say a few words of introduction, so that you have a chance to know what you can look forward to the rest of this day. I'm going to call first upon a person from India. Dr. Maybelle Arole has been working in an area in which Lutheran World Relief has cooperated with support for several years now. And the remarkable thing about her and her husband is not just that they have seen fit to be thoroughly educated and prepared for the kind of work that they are doing. After all, they went to Vellore Medical College in India, where they received their medical degree. They came to this country and attended Johns Hopkins University in order to become specialists in public health. But they also had a fresh insight. They learned to say that it is not sufficient simply to heal the immediate disease a person suffers and then see that person come back with the same disease a year or two later. We must work at disease prevention, and that calls for human development in the broadest possible perspective. Well, I'll not tell the story. I'll call on Dr. Arole, who also has an honorary doctorate from a Lutheran college, recognizing the great contribution which she and her husband have made. I'll call upon her to say a few words to you at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Marshall. I'm glad to be with you here today and share a few thoughts about health, poverty, and hunger in my part of the world. High infant mortality, high maternal mortality, and a poor status for women, social injustices are what exist in the rural areas of India. When my husband and I started our work in one of the rural areas, very quickly we realized that the hospital-oriented, doctor-centered type of health care is not what is needed. What is needed is something that would strike at the very root cause of disease. And we found that lack of water, lack of food, bad sanitation environment, housing, overcrowding were the real causes of disease. And when we looked further into it, we realized that these causes were not superficial, but they were due to the very injustices that existed in our society, in our home. For example, the woman is considered a piece of property. She is the major wage earner, and yet she does not and is not allowed to eat the food that she cooks until everyone else has eaten, and very often there is very little left for her. When it comes to water, even though there may be water in the village, certain sections of the society are considered worse than animals, and therefore they do not have access to the water for fear that they might pollute that water source. And these injustices are the ones which really contribute to disease and ill health and high mortality in our country. And unless we speak to these injustices, nothing can be done. The very religion that exists in India sanctions these injustices. And therefore, as far as we who are Christian in India are concerned, the gospel is the one which really releases us and restores human beings their dignity. And what we have been trying to do in the rural areas is to release people from their fears, from their superstitions, and make them realize that they are human beings made in the image of God, that they can live with human dignity. Women who have had such a poor status have come to realize their own worth. And it is mainly through the women that we have been able to reach out and build healing communities where people live with love and concern for each other, sharing with each other, and making a better world to live in. I would like to speak more on this later, and thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Rowley. The next person comes from Chile. He graduated from the University of Chile. He has his divinity degree from the Union Theological Seminary in Buenos Aires. He has also a degree from Princeton Seminary in this country. Since 1974, he has been an exile from Chile, and at the present time serves as a missionary at large for the United Methodist Church. He is a missionary to people like us. He has taught at seminaries, both in his own country and in this country, and we feel very indebted to having him share his insights with us in this symposium. Dr. Joel Gajardo.
As a Latin American, I've been exposed to the misery, the poverty, the hunger of millions and millions of people. Although I was privileged enough in order to be born not in poverty, I was aware of this situation, particularly through the work of the church. I realized that there was something missing, or something was at fault in the Latin American situation. On one side, we do have the extreme poverty that the majority of the Latin American people experience every day. And in the other, we do have the massive presence of the Christian Church, both Catholic and Protestant, with a message of life, repeating time and time again that Jesus Christ came in order to give us life, and life in abundance or in his fullness. Then my concern, and the concern of many in Latin America today, is how we can relate the abundance of life that is possible in Jesus Christ with the miserable life that is the lot of the majority of the people in Latin America. Has Jesus anything to do with the concrete, real life of children, women, and men in the Latin American context? Is salvation something that will happen only when we die? Or salvation and the grace of God has something to do here and now? For a while, maybe we were able to get away with this type of burning questions because we tend to think that, yes, salvation starts when you die. But now the masses of people that remain inside the churches, those poor and oppressed people, are raising the issue time and time again. There is any answer for these miseries? Is this the way that God intended us to live? Why some Christians have too much and others have too little? There is a concern for justice in the Christian community. Is anything that Jesus Christ can help us to understand in the way that we are going to make use of the goods that are available in nature, in our environment, in our countries? We could not ignore the clamor and the cry of the poor. Therefore, we need to struggle with these issues. We need to find ways in order to express our concrete solidarity with them. And the first step was being aware of the problem, and then realizing that the problem is a complex one, that will not be satisfied with easy answers. So we were sent back, so to speak, to the drawing board. We need to analyze society. We need to get involved with sociology, with economics, all these disciplines that are bearing in a more powerful expression of the gospel. Because we cannot get away any longer making the Christian faith a peaceful way of dying, but rather we need to discover the real power to make the gospel and the Christian faith a meaningful way of living. This is our challenge, and this is also the challenge of the poor to us living in affluent societies. Thank you.
Well, now you've seen the long and the short of the issue. We turn for our third guest to a person from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Tanzania. He is a graduate of the University of Dar es Salaam in that country. He has done graduate work at the University of Southampton in England. He dedicated 4 years to research on behalf of the Christian Council in Tanzania. Today he serves as secretary for development of his own church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Tanzania. It's a pleasure to introduce to you Rogathi Mshana.
Thank you very much, Dr. Marshall, and the people here. If you really think about poverty in the world today, I think Africa is where you can get the meaning of poverty. And it has been a continent of crisis all the years. One time, there was a development consultant who went to Africa to ask, to know what it means, what are the root causes of poverty and hunger in Africa. And with his tape recorder, he pointed to this poor person and asked him, "Why are you poor? Why are you hungry?" And this man said, "Because there is no food." Now the question is, what, where and how did the hunger and poverty in Africa originate? Some people might think that it happened some 5-10 years ago when Sudan or other Ethiopia has got no food at all. But it is a deep-rooted problem which started a long time ago, during colonialism up to today. These are the things which I would like to talk to you. Why is Africa continuously having problems of hunger? The Evangelical Lutheran Church in Tanzania is now involved in community-based programs to help those people who have been victims of this poverty. A woman in Tanzania will take about 18 hours to look for two things, firewood, mainly three things, firewood, water, and food cooking. So when we had a program through the World Relief to help people have water in the villages, you slice about 6 hours out of the women working hours, because she no more goes for that water to look for 6 hours. She gets a bonus of extra 6 hours to do other things for her children. And these are the programs which we are supporting and we are encouraging within the church. But things have been even worse today, that there are other things that are related to the crisis, which is deeply rooted to the historical way Africa has been oriented to the world economy. We have been producing things which we don't use and importing things which we don't need. And this has deepened the crisis. So we are addressing such issues within our church. We want to see how the grassroots people, community-based people, can benefit from our programs, can participate in changing their own lives, can feed themselves, at the same time build a sense of self-reliance. We therefore invite you to come and listen to the root causes of Africa, why they are poor, and how the church is struggling towards this, and what we think should be your role also in this long history of suffering. Thank you very much.
We've had a good demonstration of how right the Lutheran World Relief has been in bringing people to this country for the symposium. We look forward to hearing more from them. The next